This is Web Talk Guys Radio, and thank you for tuning in and joining us today. And my name is Rob Greenlee.
And I'm Web Girl Dana, and we're both right here together again to give you a glimpse into the future of the internet as we see it through our rose-colored glasses. You can hear us on CNET every week and right here in Seattle and online, too, at various places and even on your Palm Pilot.
Hackers, internet cafes, Comdex, and Microsoft, what do all those equal, Dana?
A lot of stuff going on.
I think so. The world of the internet has so much going on that today we're going to chat with a guy that can kind of give us a broad stroke on what's happening out there. And his name is Paul Andrews, and Paul is a longtime journalist and currently writes a weekly column on business and technology in the Monday's Seattle Times. Paul has also written two very good books about Microsoft and has been doing this for like a decade or something like that, so I think he can bring a lot of cool insight into what's going on out there. He's going to give us some in-depth perspectives on the software giant and some other evolving trends around the web.
Competition is good. I mean, I don't want to see Microsoft go out of business and have AOL be my only choice. What we want is competition. We don't like monopolies, but that doesn't mean we put the monopoly out of business. It means that we introduce new innovation to the marketplace. And I'm hopeful that that's what's happening with Linux, OpenOffice, all that stuff is very, very encouraging.
Later in the show, we're going to get inside the most popular type of web page out there. Most of us visit every day, the good old search engine. Among web search engines, there's a new contender. It's fast gaining a lot of buzz, and they do that without even really advertising. They're kind of the quiet type. All the Web. Well, joining us in a bit will be Stephen Baker. He's Director of Product Development for alltheweb.com.
If somebody types in a search for Saturn, for example, are they looking for the car? Are they looking for the game console? Are they looking for the Greek god? It's hard to say. So try to use a lot of linguistics tools to disambiguate the query, if you will.
That's all ahead here on Web Talk Guys Radio.
Some news from around the net this week. Online holiday shopping gets an early start, and Nielsen Net Ratings tells us where we're doing that shopping. And for your holiday photo sharing pleasure, who is the internet's number one photo site? Rob.
Santa Claus is going to be very cyber this year, I think. So anyway, the fourth annual Nielsen Net Ratings Holiday E-Commerce Index is currently showing that internet shopping activity jumped about 12% during the end of October. So it really bodes well for a strong year of sales online.
I've seen those ads from Amazon that basically, you know, have you either A, fighting the traffic and walking through puddles of, you know, or sitting in your comfortable chair. Making orders.
Yes, I think this is a fascinating trend of what's happening here, and we'll talk a little bit more about the specific companies that are actually having that kind of an impact out there. But about 87% or about 117 million surfers aged 18 and over shopped online during the last 6 months. So I'd say that's a significant number. It's about 96 million of the total active population online has been making purchases. It's significant what we're seeing here.
The dot-com bomb really isn't a bomb after all because people are buying.
Yeah, I think early on people just underestimated what the internet could really do when you had a mass population that was out there that really started to learn how to do things online.
Now, are they still going to the usual brands, the usual suspects?
This is another interesting thing is that Nielsen came back saying that the top shopping destinations are basically three of the most well-known online shopping companies, which is an interesting twist because a few years back, as you all recall, we were starting to see a lot of the big bricks chains start to show up in this list and dominate. But what's happening is it's reversing. Again, we're coming back to where the online, the pure play internet companies are starting to dominate over the bricks, the Kmarts and the Targets and things. Huh. They're not showing up as high on this list as they did just maybe 18 months, 2 years ago.
Well, tell us who's number one.
Amazon.com, and they've got a unique audience of about 30 million visitors to their site, and this is as of September of 2002, with an active reach of about 25%. Of the online population.
That's incredible. When I worked there, was it 20 million?
Yeah, it's grown a lot. And then eBay is in the number two position. They've got about 30 million. So they're real close to Amazon as far as how much impact that they're having out there.
Yeah, that's right. I think number three is actually interesting because number three is Yahoo Shopping. And as you all know, have been to Yahoo Shopping, it's comprised of a lot of individual little shops. I mean, if I wanted to open up a pasta shop, that's where I'd be. So really, that's a lot of shopping for little guys out there that are running e-commerce sites.
Walmart is not showing up on this list. They're a little further down the list. I think they're in the 10th position. So I think they were a little higher last year. the Amazons and the eBays and the Yahoos are starting to get it right online.
Rob, when people take pictures during their holiday season, yeah. Well, you have some news for them.
There's a site out there you might want to go check out. It's webshots.com. And what they are is the internet's number one photo site. This site was formerly owned by the Excited Home folks and was basically bought out of bankruptcy court by its original founders for pennies on the dollar. They're a terrific site. They've got, I think, about 28 million photos up there and about 30 million online members.
Good news this week. We also want to welcome a lot of our new subscribers to our Web Tech Guys newsletter joining our family. Just one day last week, we had Dennis from Ohio, Pierre from Quebec,
Andrea from Brazil,
Michael from Illinois,
and Robbie from Tennessee,
and Poya from the Islamic Republic of Iran,
and Lynn from China, who's a K-12 student. Now stay connected for a special conversation with Paul Andrews about Microsoft and the resurgence of internet cafes and whatever shows up on his tech radar. This is Web Talk Guys Radio.
Yeah, man, I'll tell you what, that dang old internet, man, you just go on there and point and click, get in there, talk about www.com, and you got them naked chicks on there, man, you go click, 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 it's real easy, man.
Grab a board and surf the web with those crazy Web Talk Guys.
You're back with the Web Talk Guys radio show, and I'm Rob Greenlee, and thank you for joining us and listening today on CNET Radio, and from WindowsMedia.com, and possibly WebTalkGuys.com.
And this here is Web Girl Dana. Well, Rob, hackers, internet cafes, Comdex, Microsoft, these are all very exciting ideas out there in technology, and they just never seem to go away.
Joining us to chat about all these issues is Paul Andrews. Paul is a veteran journalist and currently writes a weekly column on business and technology in the Monday edition of the Seattle Times. Paul's two books on Microsoft are called Gates, How Microsoft's Mogul Reinvented an Industry and Made Himself the Richest Man in America. And his other book is How the Web Was Won. And his website is paulandrews.com, and you can read more about him. And we're going to chat with him today. Paul, it's great to have you on the show.
Thank you, Rob.
Your article that you write for the Seattle Times, it's called Economy, basically explores products and services and business models that have been created in the aftermath of the dot-com meltdown. And what online products and services are you seeing as the leading edge of the new economy that's still continuing?
Well, a lot of them actually are continuations of the things we saw in the bubble. Mm-hmm. But you're not getting as much attention on them because, first of all, a lot of the high flyers basically took a hit. And secondly, the focus, I think, went away from technology when the stock market went away and the economy mm-hmm. fell.
Yeah.
So technology was kind of what the magic bauble that led us into this new world. And then when things fell apart, technology took the hit.
I've certainly had the thought that, you know, since technology was really, I think, plummeted us into this bad economy that we're in right now, that more than likely it's going to be technology that's going to help us climb out of it. Is that consistent with what you think is going to happen?
Yeah, it's interesting, Robin. You know, you talk to people and you get a sense that stuff is happening. I mean, a lot of back-end things, a lot of infrastructural things are happening. The server market continuing to move ahead.
Mm-hmm.
You're seeing wireless going in all different sorts of directions, really exciting stuff. But nobody really seems to know what will happen. Will we get another big push, or will it be more gradual this time because people are wary about the downside of the bubble?
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to say. I get the feeling from most of the people I talk to that 12 to 18 months out, we'll be seeing some real movement. First, I think, in the PC arena.
Mm-hmm.
I think people tend to think that when PCs start selling again, it'll signify that something's going on.
Or are we going to see more, you know, these portable, mobile devices be the catalyst that creates that?
I think we will see more in the mobile, the handhelds and the mobiles.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't get the impression that the PC is going to be replaced in that dynamic.
Yeah, I think that the PC and those mobile devices, the pocket PCs, are going to be used in conjunction with PCs more than anything else, right?
Yeah, they really are still dependent on the mothership. In a lot of ways.
Oh, yeah, they are. As broadband picks up and the wireless connectivity starts rolling out more, and I think that's a bigger topic, I think, of how the shifting of computing is going to move, I think, towards these mobile devices more and more over the coming years. And is that going to put us, you think, in a less of a dependent situation on our home PCs?
I don't know. I think for a certain type of individual, there's definitely a wireless component to their life.
Mm-hmm.
They move around a lot. They're very busy. They travel. What percentage of the overall population that represents, I'm not sure. But it's a finite figure. I don't see everybody who uses a PC on a daily basis having a real dependency on wireless applications. Certainly, if you got a cell phone, you're going to have a lot more capability than you do.
Yeah, there's no question about that. And one of the most recent articles that you've done was talking about the cafes, the net cafes are starting to revive and come back. And that was a fascinating article that I saw about that, because that flies in the face of what you would think would be going on. But I think it dovetails with what you were saying about not everybody's going to want to have that mobile connectivity or even a PC at home.
Right. It depends on how 24/7 you are. You know,
the
jargon, how much you have to be wired all the time.
Yeah.
Well, the response to that column I did a few weeks ago was overwhelming. People were writing from all over the place saying, yeah, I was in Stockholm, or yeah, I was in New York, or down in Brazil, and basically saw this stuff going on where people were flocking to these cafes. You remember back in the mid-90s, the internet cyber cafe got a lot of publicity, and
yeah,
everybody
did.
Saying it's the next great thing. And then it went through a real soft spot where things were closing down. Cybersmith, the big national chain, went bankrupt.
Mm-hmm.
So people thought, well, that thing's over. But then it bubbled back up. I mean, you go to Vancouver, there's several in Seattle, all up and down the West Coast. On my travels, I see these things, and they're filled most of the time.
You know, what's fascinating about that is it really because of broadband? Because I think weren't most of those internet cafes still involved in dial-up back in the 90s?
I didn't get the impression that dial-up. Well, I think, that's a good point. Several of them did have slower connections.
Mm-hmm.
The broadband is a factor. And, you know, since you raised that point, I just saw a report today that broadband is really starting to gain traction as a mainstream home-based feature. I mean, people really want it, and the numbers are starting to reflect that. That's going to drive a lot of stuff, as you suggested.
One thing that's fascinating about your article is that there's people out there that have a home PC, but they don't want to pay for that broadband connection. So that's one of the reasons why people are going to the cafes. And plus, it's also, I guess what you say is, in the article, is that it's getting less expensive.
Yeah. And I think it's also, you know, it's a chicken and egg thing where basically they get used to broadband at the cafe, and then they decide, well, maybe I should upgrade my PC, and broadband is getting a little cheaper. Some of the deals I've seen recently down to $29.95 a month for broadband are pretty tempting.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, exactly. What are people doing in those cafes with the internet access?
They're using their time very carefully. They're not just randomly surfing around. You know, they have a plan when they come in. Some of them are students. A lot of them are travelers. They just want to check their email and get out of there. Several of them are kids. They like to play games. But since they're on the meter, they watch their time very carefully, and they're very focused. You find them sitting there and doing, they're very application-oriented. They're doing specific things that they need to do.
Yeah, so they're not just doing the random surfing, which I think is what everybody thought they were doing in those cafes in the past.
In the past, I think they were, actually, because the internet was still kind of this new thing, and people said,
what's out there?
Yeah, what's out there? But now they've gotten more used to it as a tool, and so they go in and have a real agenda when they sit down.
Well, and that really kind of begs the answer there, that maybe the web is more valuable to more people out there than what it was back in the 90s.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's become a mainstream dependency that we have, like the telephone and TV.
Paul, I know that I read that cyber cafes are very popular in countries other than the United States, maybe the countries where it's just not possible to get home connectivity, like, let's say, Africa. And we've all had the pleasure of receiving emails from Mr. Nugato in Nigeria, you know, who wants us to invest in his, you know, getting money out of his country. And I understand that that's how it's done. It's easy to go to the cyber cafes in an African country and send out tons of this information. What is your perspective on how countries other than America are using cyber cafes?
Well, it's funny you mention Africa, because my dad went on a three-month tour down there last year.
Oh,
and
okay.
I heard more frequently from him on email on that trip than I do when he's back at his home in San Luis Obispo. So, you know, obviously there was a lot of availability there.
Yeah.
One thing you have to remember, internationally, PC penetration is nothing like it is in the U.S. I mean, people just don't have these things sitting at home. So they need, when they want to go online, they have to look for remote availability. And the cafes supply a lot of that. The other thing is that since they don't have PCs, they use phones and, you know, SMS and instant messaging and all that sort of stuff a lot more on mobile devices than we do in the States.
Mm-hmm.
So that element figures in as well, but they can't really surf the internet yet on those devices.
There's still, you know, some criminal activity that's being done in those countries using the internet because of the anonymity of being able to go into a cafe and nobody knows who's using it, or there's no particular IP identification, I would think, as part of that.
Yeah, in terms of spam and things,
anonymous
mailers. Yeah, I think that's partly it. I also think that there's enough of that stuff that goes on in the U.S.
It's everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, you know, part of human nature by now.
Exactly. Well, now, what topics are you working on now, or what areas are you seeing as the hottest thing right now that you're maybe putting an article about? Can you give us a little peek or a preview?
Well, I think, you know, Fall Convex in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And you're seeing a lot of stuff down there in terms of wireless, broadband, and mobile devices.
Mm-hmm.
So there definitely is a push in that direction. The tablet PC looks real interesting. It's gotten decidedly mixed reviews, but some folks who've used it have really liked it. So it'll be important, I think, to track tablet PC's progress because it combines a lot of these things, the wireless capability and potential, the need to interconnect with Office over the network.
Yeah.
It's a very powerful device and concept, and we'll just have to see how well it catches on and implements it. Promise. There's some interesting stuff going on in wireless beyond 802.11, which is the, you know, the cafe type stuff. In terms of cellular networks, satellite connectivity, there's some demonstrations there. I'm intrigued to see. It'll be interesting to see how far this stuff has come along and whether it really works.
Paul Andrews is on the phone with us chit-chatting about Microsoft, something he knows a little bit about after writing a couple of books on the subject. More with Paul in a moment. This is Web Talk Guys Radio.
And I gotta tell you, fellas, you have got what appears to be a dynamite sound.
The Web Talk Guys are thrilled to be your radio hosts, but we'd also be thrilled to host your website, too. The Web Talk Guys website hosting service combines a high-speed, dedicated internet connection and the marketing power of a link from the show's website to help you. We offer all the standard hosting stuff for a very low, limited-time hosting price of only $10 a month for the first 3 months. To learn more, go to webtalkguys.com and click on Web Services or email info@webtalkguys.com. You can reach us by calling area code 253-640-0164. Web Talk Guys, not just your radio hosts, but also your total hosting solution.
The Web Talk Guys, here and now.
This is Web Talk Guys Radio. I'm Rob Greenlee, and that's Dana on the other mic.
And we're having a conversation with Paul Andrews. He's shooting the breeze with us about everything under the sun when it comes to the internet and technology, from cyber cafes to Microsoft and hackers and open source.
Let's talk a little bit about your most recent article that you had up there. It seems like there's a lot of emphasis happening right now around topics related to hacking and cybersecurity, and I know it's because of Homeland Security and stuff, and I noticed that you had an article that you put up there of the Art of Deception. It's a book by Kevin Mitnick. What was your perspective on why that's a hot topic right now?
Yeah, I had mixed feelings on Mitnick's book. You know, he's a charming guy, very charismatic, but he's also a hacker who's made life difficult for a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah.
and kind of talks about the methods that hackers use without really casting an ethical element to it. So my disagreement with his approach is that he ought to point out how wrong this stuff is, and he didn't take his opportunity to do that. You know, that because of 9/11 and all the stuff that goes on the internet, credit card theft, email spam, we feel more vulnerable than ever, I think, technologically. But the problem is that we don't want to go overboard and ruin the American way of life, which a lot of things seem to be happening in that direction right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, that's right.
I think the government, the Bush administration, is using this to leverage a lot of civil liberties that basically we've taken for granted over the years, and it is perhaps in our technological society a time to reexamine, you know, whether we've become overly dependent. But by the same token, we don't want to go backwards and become a totalitarian state.
Yeah, it certainly seems like that the opportunity is there to seize more information and get more information from the American public. It could be a danger in the long run, no question about it.
The issue is, do we use technology, because technology is used against us to violate security, do we start depending on technology to solve those issues? And really, they're human issues, which is one of the reasons I focused on the ethical element to Mitnick's book. Because we have to start asking ourselves basic values questions of how we want to live as a society, and then the technology will fall into place.
Yeah, I've got a couple of books from authors. It just seems like there's such an interest in this right now, and people are, you know, publishers are actually seeing an interest in this, just like what we've been talking about. It's because of the homeland security issues. But is there a danger, do you think, of us getting a terrorist attack by a hacker?
Well, hackers can use the internet and cover their tracks very, very effectively. Whether we all have to suffer because of that, I'm not sure. I'm convinced. The FBI and the CIA know who these guys are. They track their behavior. They can do that, I think, without making all of us feel like we're living totally exposed lives and we have no privacy left. On the other hand, maybe they want us to feel that way.
Yeah.
Maybe they feel that that's a safer society. The fact remains that you're always going to have people using technology to get around law and order. That shouldn't mean that we all have to suffer.
Paul, I know you get around a lot. You work in San Francisco. You write for the Seattle Times. You live up in the Seattle area. And for a long time, as your beat as a reporter for Seattle Times has been Microsoft, and that has developed into a couple of books. You've written a book about Gates and also How the Web Was Won. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your feelings about Microsoft, what's happening with them these days?
Well, a lot of people, of course, were disappointed in the settlement ruling by the judge, basically feeling like it rubber-stamped a lot of what Microsoft wanted. I think the judge did the right thing. I think legally, the judge did the careful and appropriate thing. What I see actually is encouraging in terms of the industry. Technology is so competitive. I mean, the whole industry can turn on a dime. The signs I see happening now very much remind me of where we were at in the early 80s on the threshold between changing from CPM to DOS with the introduction of the IBM PC, where we were in the late 80s and early 90s when people were going to graphical interfaces on the Mac and Windows, and then when as recently as 94, 95 when the internet and the browser started hitting. The open source stuff feels like the same thing. It's the same people who are interested in this, who are involved and getting behind it, and they're putting a lot of brain power and horsepower into alternatives to Microsoft software. So competition is good. I mean, I don't want to see Microsoft go out of business and have AOL be my only choice.
yeah, I don't think we want that.
What we want is competition. We don't like monopolies, but that doesn't mean we put the monopoly out of business. It means that we introduce new innovation to the marketplace. And I'm hopeful that that's what's happening with Linux, OpenOffice, a lot of the open source software foundation, what Mitchell Kapoor is doing. All that stuff is very, very encouraging.
We're in the middle of a conversation with Paul Andrews. Paul's a veteran journalist who's been writing for the Seattle Times for a long while. He has a weekly column in Monday's edition, and he's the author of a couple of books on Microsoft. More in a moment. This is Web Talk Guys Radio. Mm-hmm. This is an Online Minute with Trey Hickman. He's president and founder of Nextology. Today we're talking about online content management made easy. Trey, how is Nextology making this possible?
Our online content management applications, such as Quick Editor, allow people, regardless of technical ability, to get involved in authoring, editing, and posting to the web.
Well, what about coding or HTML?
Nextology leaves the code in the design process, where it belongs. You can author and publish text, hyperlink, add graphics, and formatting in seconds without any coding.
Does a website need to be designed by Nextology to be edited with Quick Editor?
Not at all. Quick Editor retrofits any existing design, or it could be the foundation for brand new site development.
So it doesn't matter where it's hosted or who designed it?
That's exactly right, Dana. Say you're a developer. All of our web-based tools integrate seamlessly with your existing code and allow your clients the benefit of online content management.
Ah, thank you, Trey. Well, for more information about Quick Editor, visit www.nextology.com, where you can also sign up for Nextology's free monthly newsletter, Content Strategy News. For easy and affordable online content management, check out Nextology.
Web Talk Radio is back. I'm Rob Greenlee, and I'm here with Web Girl Dana.
We're having a conversation with Paul Andrews. Paul's a veteran journalist. Paul's been around a long time, writing for the Seattle Times and the New York Times. He's written a couple of books on Microsoft, and he's talking to us about all things internet.
Yeah, it certainly seems like Microsoft has had a monopoly. I think in general, I think that whole thing is misunderstood. I just think that they get so much use because they have such a good product and fits people's needs. They've done a good job with that. Granted, they have dominated, and they've probably made some mistakes, and they've been, you know, shown to have anti-competitive practices at times, but any company that's fiercely competitive is going to do some of those things. You know, I think that the ruling came out probably rightfully so. I mean, I think that the ruling was so far behind the times that it's not even really relevant anymore. So I think that the outcome was good. I mean, is that what your thoughts are as well?
Well, good is a qualitative term. I think it was appropriate. I think the judge did what the judge felt she had to do, and I think she stayed within the bounds of the case. Mm-hmm. It was a conservative ruling, there's no question. On the other hand, the guys in this case going back to the 90s who haven't been conservative, the federal judges, have been tossed off the case. So
that's right. They're no longer there.
There is something to the law and how it stands in being observed. You know, a lot of the critics wanted to be more forward-looking. I think that's tricky in this marketplace.
Yeah, it is. And things move so fast, I can't imagine that the courts could have moved as fast as the market moves. The question was, how relevant was the case over the last couple of years?
Right, based on stuff that happened centuries ago in internet time.
That's right. A lot of things have changed. And do you see Microsoft moving more into an open source type of a platform? You know, I know that there's been some talk of Microsoft integrating maybe Unix into some of their operating systems so they can have an open source version.
I think you'll see some stuff. They do have their part of Open Windows agenda, which allows certain select programmers and academics access to parts of Windows code.
Oh, okay.
I think this is savvy too, Rob, because, you know, a lot of open source's appeal has to do not with free, because a lot of the stuff really isn't totally free when you look at the cost you have to assume when you take on new software, and a lot of it's sold.
Sure.
So it's not totally free, but it is open, and that means it's customizable. You can look behind the curtain and see what the code is doing, and IT people like that. They want to be able to tailor any piece of software to their organization.
Yeah, and it seems like there is a business model there. I mean, why couldn't Microsoft write custom code for different applications?
I think there is. I think, as I say, I don't know all of the things that Microsoft can do. They're taking some steps already. They also have to watch their pricing, frankly.
Yeah, that's true.
Pricing is hurting a lot of people, and it's hurting Microsoft in the marketplace right now.
Yeah, didn't Steve Ballmer come out with a statement recently that they made a mistake with their new licensing program?
Yeah, he admitted that they screwed up in some arenas. So.
I think it was probably just bad timing more than anything else.
Yeah, it was. They have to make their numbers, too. So it's a two-edged sword. You want to meet your customers' needs, but you have to think about your shareholders' needs.
Yeah,
and
you do.
Those are incompatible right now.
So are you working on a new book or anything?
Nothing right on the horizon. I just talked to Howard Rheingold on his Smart Mob book.
Mm-hmm.
It's very entertaining and raises a lot of interesting issues in terms of connectivity on the internet and how communities are formed instantaneously today because of the mobile devices and wireless connections. And he uses this term smart mobs. I'm not sure that's the best term to use these days, but it does kind of get at the eclectic and impromptu nature of a lot of these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like his book is getting a lot of traction right now. I've got the book here myself. I'm looking at it because he's looking at coming on the show with us. But it certainly seems to be a timely topic, you know, that whole wireless connectivity. And I know he draws a lot of connection with what's going on over in Asia and those type of things with wireless and making that connection with what may be coming to America.
Well, yeah, that's the issue. I mean, America seems to be behind in a lot of these things. But as we talked before, other countries don't have PCs sitting on their desk. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when I leave my office or at home, I pretty much am up to date. I mean, I've got my email. I've checked the headline.
Yeah.
I don't really need to do that for another couple hours at least.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe even, you know, till the next day. Other people don't have that, so they're using their phones for this stuff. And that's why the pressure, technically, is to move them ahead quicker than in the U.S.
Yeah.
I think overall, if you look at services, the U.S., we still have the lead in services. We still get stuff faster and better than anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have as many alternatives as they do overseas.
Okay. Well, Paul, it was great having you on the show.
Thanks a lot, Rob.
We've been speaking with Paul Andrews, whose weekly column on business and technology appears in Monday's Seattle Times. Paul's two books on Microsoft are called Gates, How Microsoft's Mogul Reinvented an Industry and Made Himself the Richest Man in America, and his other book is How the Web Was Won. You can also get more of Paul's thoughts on Comdex and Microsoft at The Paul Wall. That's his blog at paulandrews.com.
Now hang with us as we are about to take you on a ride through all the web. They're the rising star of search engines. Joining us in just a moment is Stephen Baker, who's Director of Business Development and Marketing at Fasts, which is the company that runs all the web. We'll be taking a closer look at this Norwegian search engine company and how they're becoming the most promising search site on the net.
This is WebTalk Guys Radio.
Have you ever had to use PowerPoint? Are you in sales, marketing, training, or education? Then you need to know about Visual Communicator, the revolutionary new video presentation software from Sirius Magic. It won Product of the Year, and it can dramatically improve your business and personal communications. PC Magazine calls it astounding. See how Visual Communicator can enhance any website or email at SiriusMagic.com. That's SiriusMagic.com.
Get your .com drama right here, right now on the Web Talk Guys World Radio Show.
Hi, I'm Rob Greenlee, and I'm joined by Web Girl Dana. This is the Web Talk Guys Radio Show, and I want to thank you for listening. Well, I've got good news for web searchers. There is an arms race going on, and that's definitely going to help you. It's more like a good old healthy competition to offer the best search engine on the web, and you, the surfer, are definitely the winners in all this. One of the new search engines that is coming strong on the internet is definitely offering some new and better features.
Well, you may know that conventional wisdom has Google ranked as the number one search engine on the web. Another Norwegian search engine company called Fast Search and Transfer has produced a search engine called alltheweb.com, and it's clearly getting a lot of that mojo going out there.
Joining us today is Stephen Baker, who is Director of Product Development for Fast, the makers of alltheweb.com. Stephen, thanks for joining us on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Why don't you give us a little brief overview of what Fast is and the kind of technology you guys are using?
Sure. Fast is a search technology company. We have our roots in Norway. We were founded in 1997, and the core technology was developed in the main technical institute located in Norway. And to this day, we still do have the majority of our engineering functions located in Norway and our sales and marketing functions here in the United States. We provide technology focused really on two broad markets, and we're organized into two business units as such. We focus on the enterprise market, where we sell search technology that enables database lookup, intranet searching, site searching, all those types of things that enterprises are typically interested in. And then we have an internet business unit, which focuses on web searching and essentially providing web search infrastructure and web search results to some of the world's leading portals in the U.S., like us would be our largest customer, for example.
Now, how do you guys compare to like a Google out there? What is the differences between what you guys are doing in the marketplace and what they're doing?
you can really compare that on two levels. From a business standpoint, Google's really in the game of having a destination site, really a destination search site. Google.com is a brand. It's become a very large brand among searchers. We're more in the OEM space or in the private label space. We license our search results to portals. What you'll find is most portals globally actually outsource their search functions because of the operational sophistication as well as all the hardware that's required to run a search engine. It's a little bit out of the core competency of your standard portal, of your typical portal. So they want to outsource it to a company such as Fast. And why they go to Fast as opposed to Google is primarily for that original distinction and that Google really is a destination site. So many portals do view Google more as a competitor than a partner.
So are most of your focus on being more of a consumer search site, or are you guys trying to be pretty much a back-end tool?
We try to be a back-end tool.
Okay.
We do have a demonstration site, which is alltheweb.com, and that is used primarily for demonstration purposes. It's probably our best sales tool so that our customers can get a feel of the technology. But on the other level, just to go back to the Google aspect, from a technology standpoint, so I would say at a business standpoint, we're not really competitors. We don't bump into each other a lot. From a technology standpoint, they are definitely our biggest competition, and most analysts and search enthusiasts consider Google and Fast to have the most advanced search technology, so we do compete with them on items such as search relevancy and index size and those types of things.
Well, Stephen, I really started using All the Web, which is your sort of consumer version of what you do for OEMs, and I find that I really like the way it's structured. And so actually, I'm surprised to hear that you say it's just sort of a showcase site. Talk to me about the uniqueness of how the search is looked for. Give me a few examples of some search terms that will return some unique results that maybe a place like Google wouldn't.
Sure. At Fast, we're entirely focused on the user experience as it relates to search, and that really falls into two components. One is the data that you have in the index. You know, the web just doesn't consist of web pages. It consists of different content sources, such as news data. News data is being changed every minute. Or multimedia files, being able to search for image files, or even being able to search for software downloads. So we at Fast understand that searching the web does not just mean searching web pages, and as such, we've built an index of a variety types of data or content pools that users can search on. And the second aspect of the user experience is really not just taking a query and blindly sending it to one of these indexes, but really actually looking at the query and saying, what does this query mean? If somebody types in a search for Saturn, for example, are they looking for the car? Are they looking for the game console? Are they looking for the Greek god? It's hard to say. So we try to use a lot of linguistics tools to disambiguate the query, if you will. Actually, why don't we start with Saturn as an example? If you're at alltheweb.com and you type in a search for Saturn, one of the first things you'll see at the top of the page is something that we call beta fast topics. And what this attempts to do is to take that term Saturn and say, what are all the possible meanings of Saturn? And you'll see some folders there with different categories, the first one being autos, the second one being games. Actually, if you go down to the second line, all the way on the left, there's one called science. So we begin to say, okay, what is this user really looking for? And give them the opportunity right away to disambiguate their query.
I like that.
Yeah, that's terrific.
At the same time, if you go down a little bit further, you can actually see there's something called latest news right there. We also recognize there may be some news articles related to Saturn. So we've set up a separate news index, which is constantly being updated. There's like 3,500 news sites, hundreds of thousands of articles in there, and we're constantly updating those articles, so we have the freshest news. And it just so happens we actually picked up something on Saturn in the Car by GM, talking about the redesign of the Saturn L series, and you actually see that it was indexed just 37 minutes ago.
I love it. Your index scans about 800 articles a minute in that news section.
Exactly, yes. We think it's the most aggressive out there right now.
We're having a conversation with Stephen Baker, who is Director of Product Development for Fast Search, the company behind alltheweb.com. This is Web Talk Guys Radio.
The Web Talk Guys are thrilled to be your radio hosts, but we'd also be thrilled to host your website, too. The Web Talk Guys website hosting service combines a high-speed, dedicated internet connection and the marketing power of a link from the show's website to help you. We offer all the standard hosting stuff for a very low, limited-time hosting price of only $10 a month for the first 3 months. To learn more, go to webtalkguys.com and click on Web Services or email info@webtalkguys.com. Web Talk Guys, not just your radio hosts, but also your total hosting solution.
You're listening to the Web Talk Guys radio show, and my name is Rob Greenlee, and I'm here with Web Girl Dana. We're talking about a rising star in the world of search engines. That search engine is alltheweb.com, and we're speaking with Stephen Baker, who is the Director of Product Development for Fast Search, the makers of alltheweb.com. Now, how does your search spider go out and find content on the internet? I mean, what's the criteria that it uses primarily to capture and categorize content?
Sure. It does two things. There are two ways of capturing data. First is you have to be able to find a website. And the way crawlers find websites is essentially by tracing links.
Mm-hmm.
And as it's tracing links, the spider is just essentially grabbing as much information as it possibly can to bring back to the index and say, okay, I've got all this text here. How do I make sense of it? What is it? And what it does is essentially extract keywords and key phrases from that at that point. The way the ranking works is it's based on two things. Since we crawl the web by tracing links, we kind of have a map of the web, and we can understand how do sites point to each other.
Oh, okay.
And sites that have more links to them tend to be more authoritative sources than sites that don't. So that affects ranking. And then the second element that affects ranking is the keyword. It's essentially, now that we've extracted all the keywords and the key phrases during the crawling process, when a user types in a query, we make sure we match the keyword accordingly.
When you're talking about how many other sites are linking to your site, does it rank the relevancy of those sites that link to you and how important they are and how many links they have to? So is there like a chain reaction formula that works?
Absolutely, exactly. Every site has a rank based on who's pointing to that site or how many sites are pointing to that site. A simple example, if you're the Seattle Mariners site and mm-hmm. you've got Major League Baseball pointing to you, because Major League Baseball points to the Seattle Mariners, it has a heavier weight, especially because the Major League Baseball site would be considered to be the most authoritative source on baseball on the web.
What size is your searchable database right now? I mean, I know there's a lot of information out there about Google having 2 billion pages.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you guys in that, and really how important is index size?
Sure. That's a great question. The 2 billion number that you're referencing Google on, I believe that refers exclusively to web pages.
Uh-huh.
As opposed to image files and those sorts of things. Our web-based index is about 800 million URLs right now.
Mm-hmm.
We've actually been spending the past couple of months trying to figure out the answer to the question that you just asked, which is how big should an index be? And you know, the jury is still out on that. What we try to frame the question is, how much interesting content is there out there to search on the internet? We are adding about 100 million URLs per week to the database, and our goal is to get to 2 billion as well. But we're not going to sacrifice quality for quantity. So if it comes a point that the only way we can get to 2 billion URLs is by having duplicate URLs or broken links, things like that, we're just not going to do it. And that's part of the reason why we've been doing it very slowly. We've just been adding 100 million or so every week. And so far the additions have been, you know, high-quality additions, a lot of web that we hadn't found before.
What size do you think that the internet is right now, and what percentage do you think that 600,000 or that 2 billion is to everything that's out there?
You know, people say that the searchable web is somewhere between 3 billion and 6 billion web pages. I would say, based on what we're finding so far, that it's probably a little bit less than that. You know, there might be 3 billion or maybe 6 billion unique pages out there,
mm-hmm.
But what you find is a lot of them are duplicates of each other. They're mirrored sites and the such. So I think when it comes to unique content pages or interesting searchable sources, I think it may actually be closer to 1.5 to 2 billion pages out there. The wild card comes in when you begin to look at the invisible web or the deep web, and mm-hmm. there's so many definitions for that. We originally defined the deep web as being non-HTML content. That was the whole reason why we developed multimedia search. We were actually the first company to develop a multimedia search engine where you can search for images, audio files, and video files. And you know, that index size right now for us is about 150 million or so. And that's obviously going to grow over time, especially as broadband becomes more popular. I think you're going to see a lot more people post that kind of high-quality, broadband-driven content on the web. You also have another definition of the deep web, which is database content. Obviously, we can't get into an Amazon product catalog or a database and extract all the information from it. Search engine crawlers just can't get into that. The need to fill out those kind of forms, you know, to request specific content on books and stuff is something that crawlers just can't handle.
Do you see that changing over time, though? Is that something that you guys could potentially do in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think there was a book that I think it was Chris Sherman wrote, which was called The Invisible Web, and he estimated the invisible web to be 500 times the size of the visible web, or the searchable web.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a tremendous amount of content stored in databases. The key is identifying where are the most important information repositories. So yes, we've begun to develop technology frameworks where we can actually work with companies, you know, such as eBay or Amazon, to integrate their database content into our search engine and make it searchable. And I think that's going to be pretty exciting. I think that's really where you're going to see search engines go next, is how do you index the invisible web?
We're speaking with Stephen Baker, who's Director of Product Development for Fast Search, the company behind alltheweb.com. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back. This is Web Talk Guys Radio.
Come on, eavesdrop. Listen to the Web Talk Guys.
Hey, I'm Rob Greenlee, and I'm here with WebGirl Dana. We're having a conversation with Stephen Baker, who is the Director of Product Development for alltheweb.com.
And Peter, your search engine's a very intelligent search engine, not just in its technology, but in its people. I think I read that you had about 30 PhDs that worked in search engine development. That was pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's correct. We have some of the best and the brightest out there.
You know, I'm always intrigued of talking to companies that were sort of birthed other than in the United States. And as you mentioned earlier, Fast is a Norwegian company. And I was reading a little bit about you. Actually, LinuxJournal.com has an interesting article about All the Web and about Fast. And they, being Linux users, of course, already have a propensity toward Norway.
Mm-hmm.
And I was interested to read that a lot of your R&D people kind of started out from one sort of Unix-oriented computer club from a University of Trondheim. Could you tell us a little bit about sort of the Norwegian influence of Fast and how that really is unique?
That's a great question. NTNU is the university. It's a Norwegian Technical University, and it is based in Trondheim. And that's where the original algorithms were developed by different PhD candidates. Let me see. What is the influence of the Norwegian culture over the company? That's a tricky one to answer, I would say.
Well, you have a relationship with Opera, for one.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, so there's the business standpoint, but then there's also just the pure cultural standpoint. What you'll find is that Norwegians are very modest. They don't like to brag or boast about their accomplishments. And what that's enabled us to do is we really approach each and every one of our customers as a partner, because we care more about their success than about our success, because, God, if we're thrust in the limelight, we just wouldn't know what to do. So we really approach every customer, whether it be Lycos or IBM or eBay, as a partner, and really say, well, you know, how can we make your company more successful, or how can we help you achieve your business objectives? And I think that is a deeply rooted cultural aspect of Fast that really does come from Norway and the modesty that's associated with Norwegians. We do have a partnership with Opera. There is some advantages to being in the Scandinavia region, Opera being one of them. We do have an integration with their web browser, so you can access the Fast web search engine directly through the Opera browser. And then also in our mobile unit and our wireless search unit, you know, Ericsson and Nokia, both Scandinavian companies, we have tight partnerships with them for their wireless portal services.
So how did you guys weather the economic downturn here that really hit a lot of the technology companies? What strategies did you guys use to keep your head above water?
Sure. We really, really focused on a couple of core success factors. In the enterprise business unit, it was working with a handful of what we call lighthouse partners, the IBM, the eBays, the Reuters of the world, companies that have huge information challenges where search can really be a major benefit mm-hmm. to them. We knew if we made those customers successful, it would open up the door for us when the technology downturn ends. You'll see that we'll be coming to market with our first full suite of enterprise products in just a couple of weeks here, and we're ready to take the market by storm now. On the internet side, we really focused on one key strategy, which was Europe. Europe was lacking a really good search engine, one that could actually handle the language and national requirements of the European Union. We were the first search engine to really develop a robust set of linguistics and language support for the European community, and we really took that market by storm as well. In addition to powering Lycos over there, we power the T-Online portals, the Tiscali portals, and a handful of others. I think we are the largest provider of OEM search in Europe right now. And that was a winning strategy for us. We saw the opportunity, and we really went after that market in 2001.
Now, if a listener to our show has a website and they want to get indexed in your directory, mm-hmm. how would they go about doing that?
There's two ways. On alltheweb.com, you'll see on the bottom there's a couple of links. One says submit your site. That's our free submission program. Anybody can go there and register, have their domain included in the search engine for free. There are a lot of limitations to it in terms of when will the crawler actually get to it. The other thing you'll see on all the web, there's a box on the lower left corner, which is called Fast Partner Site. Fast Partner Site is our guaranteed inclusion program, where you are guaranteed to be included in the index. We will revisit your site every 48 hours. There's a fee for that. We don't distribute it directly, but if you click on that, I think it'll take you right over to Lycos. They're our first distributor in the U.S.
Okay.
They charge something like $30 for the first URL or something like that. You're paying for the guarantee to always be there.
So has that program worked out well for you guys to help generate some revenue?
Jury's still out. We just launched the service about 3 weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
And initial response to the service over the past 3 weeks has been phenomenal. As long as Fast powers the most popular portals out there, people will be willing to pay to be in our index, because we'll be driving them traffic, and they can really see the return on their investment.
Do you ever see yourself getting involved in sponsored links?
It's really not a core competency for us. I think some of our competitors have moved into it because they actually do operate destination sites, but we don't. I would definitely see us partnering with the sponsored link companies to provide a better seamless solution on a site such as Lycos or some other properties, but we're not really in the pay-for-placement game, and we just want to focus on what we do best, which is algorithmic web search.
Stephen, thank you for joining us on the show.
Thank you very much. It's a great experience.
Yeah, it was fabulous hearing about what you're doing at FAST and at alltheweb.com. And you have a great weekend.
Thanks, you too.
Thanks.
Bye now.
This is Web Tech Guys Radio.
And I'm Web Girl Dana.
And my name is Rob Greenlee, and we hope to have you back with us again next week. I'll see you around the net.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay?
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for downloading the Web Talk Guys. Bookmark us now for next week. Same Web Talk Guys time, same Web Talk Guys channel.